time to take a look at the Arizona Sports Poll Question. Brought to you by Sanderson Ford. The best play is at Sanderson Ford.
Maloney takes over and asks the questions to both Josh Coldmender filling in for Wolf and me. What's today's question?
Do you think Arizona State basketball finishes first in the Pac-12?
You're setting us up for failure here by asking. Full disclosure, if it doesn't happen, now it's officially the Maloney jinx for asking us this question. But I'm going to say yes. I like their schedule the rest of the way with the Washington schools who are stinking up the joint, even though they did lose to Washington State. They probably lose maybe at UCLA, which is, I think, Thursday night. But if that's just the only loss, yeah, I'm going to say they finish in first place.
I think so, too, especially the way Hurley talks about this team really starting to come together now. Mm-hmm. He still thinks there's more in there, but obviously just think that there's still more after a seven-game winning streak shows the confidence he has in his team. So I think they can get the job done, especially those kids knowing what it would mean to bring, you know, a conference title to the school.
Yeah. Maloney, what's the results?
So 52% say no and 48% say yes.
I bet there's a ton of – there could be some U of A bias in there. U of A fans trying to vote on it, but I'm wondering how many of that are ASU fans that have the defeatist attitude, which is fair because, I mean, look at Saturday's game. You just came off that enormous win against Oregon. You're playing a weaker team, and you only win by a point. But, Maloney, is there any way for you to look at how many people actually voted on it? I wonder why she wears headphones when she doesn't listen to a thing I say. Oh, hi. Can you look at how many people actually vote? Do we know that number? The reason why I wanted to know that is how many of you are at arizonasports.com and saw that question and said, I want to answer it. And the reason why I ask that, it has everything to do with how much does this town care about this? Because you have a seven-game winning streak. This team will probably be ranked. You know what? The rankings should have come out. They come out anywhere between 10:30 and 11:30. So, Maloney, will you keep an eye on the top 25 rankings? Because I bet you ASU is going to be ranked after this, after their weekend. They're probably going to be a seven seed in bracketology now with if I'm right that they go 3-1 the rest of the way in the regular season, and I'm going to just throw out a made-up number and say they win at least one game in the Pac-12 tournament, that puts them at 5-2 to finish. And if they're 5-2 to end the year, they're probably about a six seed. And if they win more than that, or if they actually go on a run that they only lose one more regular season game and win the Pac-12 tournament, they vault all the way up to near a four seed. And now you're talking about, okay, you can do real damage. You're talking about a Sweet 16 team, and I'm wondering whether or not ASU basketball fans, if there are enough of them to actually like do something about it and not have ASU go on to go to an NCAA tournament site, and they've only traveled people that get paid by ASU. Like, you actually have fans that actually show up.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what they're trying to establish. And I think, you know, it has to start from the team. And I think that's what Hurley's doing, is instilling, hey, that we can win. We can go into anywhere in the Pac-12 and win. We can go anywhere and win, especially if they can do some of that damage in the Pac-12 tournament and then see what happens in the NCAA tournament.
This is something that was interesting. Kamani Lawrence said this after the game on Saturday.
I got them instilling confidence in me, you know, so – you know, between the work I've been putting in and them just, like, money, shoot the ball. It's just, like, it's a good feeling, you know. You know, I don't even think about it no more. Like, as soon as I catch, I can just let it go.
The reason why I bring that up is Bobby Hurley has done something coaching-wise, and it's been a staple of him as a coach, so it's not like he just changed. But he's really reaping the benefits of something where it's actually something that's been kind of criticized with him, and that is the freedom of shot selection. He is not the kind of guy that screams bloody murder when somebody shoots the ball. Now, he'll go over and film and explain why that wasn't a great shot and things like that. But he believes if you're thinking whether or not this is a good shot, it's not going to go in anyway if you shoot it. And if you don't shoot it, you're going to be wondering whether or not you should have shot it. Where he would rather you just shoot. If you don't know, if you don't think about it, shoot. So here's Kamani Lawrence, who's actually saying, I know they're in my ear telling me to shoot. And he had a good game. Rob Edwards is the other one. If Rob Edwards actually shoots the ball well, this is an Elite Eight team. If Rob Edwards doesn't shoot the ball well, it's kind of a team that will probably win their first game in the tournament, and that's about it. He's that much of a difference maker, but it's also because his confidence does seem to go up and down. And to see a coach have the courage to say, no, I want you guys to shoot it, when everybody else in the world is saying, don't shoot that, and now the kids are making those shots because of the confidence of the coach, it's just a game changer with them.
Oh, 100%, especially for kids that are coming from a school that they probably were the premier player in school, and they're coming in here and they try to see who they how they fit in and have that tentativeness. And I think that's great that he's telling them, shoot, 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 because you don't want any doubt in their mind. You don't want them to be tentative or hesitant at all. And sometimes that's the difference between, you know, a blocked shot or, you know, it's just not a chance that thing goes in. And so I think that's just a great thing for him to instill in these players is, hey, shoot, shoot, shoot. If we have to curb you down, that's way easier than us getting you up to just letting the ball fly. So I think that's – and just hearing him talk about that, that they have the confidence in me, it's going to make you have the confidence in yourself to not only take the shot but also make the shot.
Yeah, Ray Anderson, I mean, that's a slam dunk hire in him hiring Bobby Hurley. And then on top of that, Alonzo Verge, the way he's played, a transfer into the program who didn't get a ton of playing time early on. Now he's coming off the bench and putting up 20 points. And it has every, you know, you might say, well, why didn't you play him earlier if he's going to do that? Well, not enough times do we give credit to the coach and say, well, maybe he had to either hold him accountable and make sure he was doing things within the team concept, or maybe he wouldn't be playing as well if he wouldn't have made him earn it. You know, in today's society of, oh, you should have given something to him sooner, versus, no, Bobby Hurley forced him to earn more of the playing time and earn his time out there. And now that you made him hungry and forced him to play harder, and I'm not saying that was a problem, I don't know, but you're reaping the benefits of that. And too often we say what you could have had, as opposed to realizing maybe you wouldn't have had any of this from Verge if it wasn't for the way Bobby Hurley coaches him.
Yeah, that's true. And I think that's the sign of a good coach, is being able to handle all the different personalities, knowing what they need and what to get the best out of them. And who knows the inner workings, if it was something where, hey, we want to see from him that this is what he wants. And now all of a sudden you're rewarding him for doing that. Or if it was just, hey, we want to kind of ease him along. We know what we can get out of him eventually, but we just want to make sure he gets there before we turn him loose.
Whatever they did, they were right. Coming up next, DeAndre Ayton. Are his latest comments showing you that he's getting closer or that he'll never get it? On 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. The worst thing you can do, I've just realized, is prepare yourself to talk about DeAndre Ayton after you watch Zion Williamson highlights. But Zion, 28-7 yesterday against Golden State. He's up to 33 minutes. And if you haven't seen the highlights of what Zion did, it's just the ferocity, the anger, and yet the angry joy that he plays the game with, it's absolutely perfect. And it's amazing to watch him. And yet, what are we talking about with DeAndre Ayton? DeAndre Ayton, if you didn't see it or hear it on Sunday, you need to as a Suns fan. DeAndre Ayton, for the most part in this game, was absolutely fantastic. 28 points, 19 boards. He did have 7 turnovers, but he was playing so much harder for a while, and it stands out so clear when he does this. And then we found out what happened after he spoke to the media.
I think where it got me was I got blocked. Dude blocked my dunk. I think it was Gafford. Gafford blocked me. And that's when I was like, nobody never blocked my dunk. So, yeah.
So the block got you going. How did it get you going, DeAndre?
Yeah, that woke me up. I said, okay, these dudes competing, they came to play. It shouldn't be like that to where somebody have to throw the first punch at me, but yeah, it'd be like that sometimes. And my team woke me up. Like always, Coach got on me. Coach Bryant got on me, and yeah, I answered.
My biggest struggle with this is you've been here for a year and a half, and you know the number one critique, not of just fans, not of just media, but your own teammates and your own coaches, is your lack of intensity. And then you still, at this point, say, wow, these guys are out here competing. That is, I'm really negative on this because it's been so long. He's had a year and a half. And I know if the Suns were right here, if Monty Williams was on right now with us, Monty would say, here's his age and give the guy a break. He's going to figure it out. We've got to coach him up. And yet you don't say that about Zion. We don't have to coach up Zion.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a shock that it's 100 games into his career almost, and he's still surprised by that. That's the part that really stands out. And he's mentioned before, we talked about it that in the last segment, we talked about him, that he's been surprised by how good some of these guys that he's played against
yes.
are. Like, it was a surprise. Okay, maybe you watch them on TV and you don't know that and going against them, but it shouldn't be a surprise that they're going to bring the best that they have at you.
Mm-hmm.
That should never be a surprise. I mean, you're playing in the NBA. This isn't just a pickup game where some guys are out there having fun and some guys are taking it as the most serious thing they do all
yes.
week. This is what you guys get paid to do. And especially if it's a knock, I mean, kind of refreshing to see him being honest about that.
Mm-hmm.
But is there going to be a next step to address the issue? Or is the next time it happens going to be the same thing? Sometimes it's going to be like that. I know it shouldn't be, but sometimes it is. You can't just keep saying that, and then all of a sudden that becomes the knock on you for the rest of your career.
Because he had a game this year at Madison Square Garden where it was just holy crap. I mean, he was so fantastic. And that's the hope. I want to go positive about what he's saying here, and because he was so good against Chicago. But we've seen it before where he has one of these amazing games and then doesn't keep it going, then kind of falls on his face and isn't able to keep up that intensity. Now, at least the lack of defense from this team lately has been team-wide. It hasn't been just DeAndre Ayton. But there are still moments in this game where you see him just kind of asleep at the wheel, and yet he's this good. He can be this great. Now, does this start the competitive fire? Because tonight they play Utah, and Utah has Rudy Gobert, and Rudy Gobert is not going to be one where any human being should be shocked about his competitive level. And if DeAndre Ayton can't bring it to bear before the game starts, how do you not wonder if he ever will?
That's exactly right. And now all of a sudden you start talking about someone who has potentially transcendent talent to
yes,
be
absolutely.
One of these elite players, especially for his size and being able to dominate the game in the post like he
mm-hmm.
can. To where he just becomes kind of a role player, bounces around, or does he become a franchise player that you
mm-hmm.
build everything around him and obviously Booker as well? But that's what's going to be him taking the next step, is finding that where from the tip, he's ready to go at the other guy.
Mm-hmm.
And you talk about all the greats, and one thing they always talk about, is particularly some guys in basketball, is that killer instinct.
Yes.
That they wanted to go right at you, and that's something that usually separates – one class of player from just, you know, the guys that fill out the rest of a roster.
Do you think you would be good, if you just tuned in, Josh Coleman is filling in for Wolf today, former Diamondback starting pitcher. Do you think you would be good in a talent evaluation spot as either a scout or even a baseball GM, or even if we dream about other sports? Because here's something Steve Keim always says. He believes that they don't miss on the player very often. They miss on the heart, they miss on the head, things like that. And he won't come out and say publicly what a terrible draft pick Robert Kimdichie was, but Robert Kimdichie is just, I mean, here's a guy that is just dripping with talent, even more than DeAndre Ayton, yet just didn't have the heart for it, just didn't care enough to play consistently as hard as he could every single play. It just wasn't him. And now he's gone. Do you think you could do that? And I'm asking because of all the time you spent in a clubhouse of being able to quickly see this guy's got the fire, this guy doesn't, and how you figure that out.
You talk about any coach, any sport, any scout, that's the biggest question. And that's why they go through this, especially in the NFL, where every draft pick matters.
Yeah.
And they go to great lengths to talk to teammates, to talk to high school coaches, to talk to, you know, professors or whatever, just to get a background kind of built about what kind of guy that he is off the field. Because the on-the-field stuff's easy. You can measure that. You can watch it. You can break down film. You know exactly how he's going to fit in. It's the other stuff.
Yeah.
And, I mean, and you go back to, like, the Johnny Manziel situation. Unbelievable on the field. You're like, all right, he's has all the talent. And then he even admitted afterwards, he's like, if the Browns would have done any of their homework, they would have found out that I didn't like watching film. I didn't put in the work. And it was so glaringly obvious that it, I mean, but most of the time it's kind of hard to tell because some guys are a completely different person away from it. And then as soon as they put on the uniform or as soon as they get to the park, everything changes.
It's funny.
And they'll be able to separate that.
I would be able, I could admit this to you publicly that I, if I am scouting you at Central Michigan or getting ready for the draft or even you coming up through the minors, I would have totally missed on you because you are a really funny dude, very laid back guy, don't hardly take anything seriously. Until it's me versus you, until you start, and then it's so hard to read a guy like you who doesn't take a lot of things in life seriously other than family and friends and stuff like that. But once you're competing, you're all in, and there's not a lot of guys that are that you can easily figure that out unless you're around them an awful lot. And I don't know how a scout figures that out, if it's talking to coaches or if it's just being around you and seeing how much you're fighting through everything with the guy, because you're one of those types of people that it would have been in a positive way. Like with Aiden, it's the exact opposite. It's like, I can't see any fire in you when you're playing, but you're not a guy that acts like you want to rip somebody's throat out until you have the opportunity to do it.
Yeah. And I think that kind of helped me is, you have one person away from the field, and then you turn it on. Like, you can be able to turn it on, but some people can't. They're either all one way or they're all the other way. And that's something they're trying to figure out about Aiden right now. Is he all just no fire and can maybe get prompted that way? Or is it something where he can become, you know, someone that wants to take over the game and to dominate it from the start?
Here's what happens tonight. They tip off against the Utah Jazz tonight, 7 o'clock here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. What do you want to watch? The first quarter.
We as a team have to come up with that urgency. You know, it's coach speech. You've heard it all before. We've got to start with that. And two nights in a row with that kind of effort in the first half, we put ourselves in the hole. But, again, we have shown resiliency time and time again with this group, and I'm glad to get a win.
Well, hopefully they can do that tonight. Coming up next, the Ass Trolls, as I call them, is a story that will not go away. Should it? That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Josh Coleman, our former opening day pitcher for the Arizona Diamondbacks, filling in for Wolf today. And if you haven't heard, this is pretty cool. Mike Fiers got ovation after ovation pitching for the A's this weekend.
Oakland's going to support us no matter what. I mean, they've always been there. I mean, it's fun. It's fun playing, you know, in front of these fans and with these guys on the field. So just a great day of baseball, and, you know, we're having fun.
And, of course, he did not want to go and say, yeah, I feel really good that I'm the one that talked about the Astros cheating scandal and now fans like me. He's trying to get off of the topic.
Try to put it behind me. Like, you know, we got to focus on 2020. Our season's coming up pretty quick, so we need to focus on baseball and get ready. Like in the past, we've started off kind of slow, and it's kind of halted us, you know, late in the year because we're always trying to fight from behind. So right now, the earlier we can get ready, better off we're going to be.
And Josh, one of the things that fascinates me about the Astros story, even more than just human beings banging on trash cans, and like that's where technology has got us to, that you're banging on a trash can, is that this is one of the few times I've ever seen a story in the time I've been in the media where I think the media kind of blew it. We didn't talk about it enough. And then once the players started talking about it, I'm almost, wow, there's more of a problem within baseball about the Astros than there was even out of baseball. Now all of us are running to the story, but I think the players have done an amazing job of being more angry than anybody else about what's going on with the Astros.
Yeah, and just talking to a couple guys when I was down in Australia, a few guys just chatting about it. Everyone was just taken aback by how unsevere the penalty was. It was more like a slap on the wrist. It mm-hmm. seemed like baseball was doing everything to sweep it under the rug, and it kind of got to that point until, like you said, the Astros' apologies, and you just saw how unsincere they are
yes.
about that.
Once Jim Crane, the owner, said, I don't think it really created an advantage. Yeah, oh, my God.
Yeah, and then contradicted that 45 seconds. Like, people were having a field day with that. But then I think baseball, ever since the steroid era, has had a huge rallying point amongst all the players against any form of cheating.
Uh-huh.
So they tried to do everything they could to get steroids out of the game. Make the penalties as harsh as you want. Let's just create a level playing field. That's what everyone wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you're seeing here is hitters talking about, oh, Stanton saying, oh, I'd hit 80 home runs if I knew it was coming. Other guys saying, yep. I'd hit 400, I'd hit 500 if I knew it was coming. They just want a level playing field because it's hard enough to play this game yes. as it is. And they want it to be the same for everyone across the board. And I think now you're seeing them cry out for more harsh penalties because if this is all that's going to happen to you
mm-hmm.
to win a World Series and mm-hmm. reap all the benefits of that, what's going to stop the next team from the next
yeah.
form or whatever they can do to try to get an advantage or cheat like that?
I don't know if you heard it, but last week there was amazing comments from Jonathan Lucroy, who was with some of those A's teams, and he says they didn't quite know what fully the Astros are doing, but they knew a lot. And talked about how much he was trying to change the signs up and how for some guys that was okay, but for other pitchers, it just totally messed them up. And have you ever been in a situation where you guys had to be just off the wall, overly anal sign-wise about something? And does it mess with you? Because I can't imagine how you can get into an athletic flow when you've got to go over the top in your thinking.
Yeah, it definitely affects some guys, not only just from a pitcher, but from a catcher. You kind of get used to the cadence of the signs, especially with certain guys, and now all of a sudden you're putting more thinking into it, so you might slow down a little bit. The pitcher, all of a sudden, oh, yeah, we have to do multiple signs all the time or constantly changing them. So all the energy you're putting into thinking about that takes away from just, oh, boom, there's the sign, I'm going to throw the pitch. But we actually had that, the Diamondbacks team in 2011 going into Miller Park to play the Brewers in the first round of the playoffs. It got tipped off that maybe something was going on or they were trying to get signs or steal signs or something. So we were doing multiple signs, nobody on, guys on first, guys on third, as opposed to just a guy on second. So it definitely can affect you because there's just more thinking now. You're so used to just being able to get one sign when no one's on second, and now put more thought into that, put more thought into switching up the signs, making sure you're on the same page with the catcher. There's no mix-ups. Catcher doesn't get crossed up or something because all of a sudden he thinks mm-hmm. we're using one set of signs and you think you're using another set of signs. But it's been great just to see baseball come together. Very rarely is everybody behind one issue. And it seems like if you're not on the Astros, everybody's wondering, what was really the downfall for them doing any of that?
Right, right.
There really wasn't any penalty to that.
I can kind of ask you this. Like, I don't want the Dodgers to be given the title because, A, how do we know they wouldn't have lost to another American League team? But the stripping of the title, it does seem like it's getting more and more attention. Like, I almost feel like Rob Manfred might get forced into doing it to get baseball back behind him again or even get the players back behind him again. Do you think that that's a good remedy? Do you think that really – did that do anything?
Maybe, but I don't even think the players want stuff because that, again, just happens to the team.
Yeah.
All those guys can still say, no, we won the World Series. Yeah. Here's the ring. I can show it to you. it almost seems like they want something to happen specifically to the players,
mm-hmm.
something that's actually going to be a detriment to the Astros because as it stands now, they lose out on a couple draft picks, but those aren't going to affect the team until most of the guys that are playing there are long gone.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's future Astros problems.
Because I can ask you this stuff because about 2011, I don't know how you feel about 2011.
I promise you on everything that's ever meant anything to me in my life.
But I'm still bitter. I mean, I'm just the fan. I'm still bitter about 2011. I'm not saying you guys would have won a World Series, but you guys were a really good ball club in 2011. So you combined something that I didn't know, whether it's true or not. You guys had to worry about the fear of what was going on at Miller Park, and then mix in everything about Ryan Braun that season, and specifically in that series, and specifically against you. I'm still bitter. Are you guys that, like, do you relate to how the Dodgers feel? Because if you guys might have had something taken from you that you could have done something special.
A little bit. And I think there's some guys, I know there's some members of the staff from that team mm-hmm. that were very, especially everything that happened with Braun.
Yeah.
Because he was almost a hit every time he got up. And you could kind of single him out as someone who almost single-handedly won that. And then like all three games were won in Miller Park. Mm-hmm. And you were wondering if they're getting an advantage. So now all of a sudden that at least can creep into your thoughts. But, yeah, everyone just wants to know that whoever they're going up against is standing on the same ground you are.
Yeah.
That way you're not trying to fight something going on and the other team all together, because that's a severe disadvantage. And I think that's why all these players, like your Markakis is coming out and saying that, and some of the other guys, you know, wanting a stiffer penalty because they don't want this to happen ever again mm-hmm. because they want to make sure that if they're going to strap on and go through a full season, try to get to the playoffs, win a World Series, they want to know that another team's not getting there because of an advantage or making it easier on themselves.
I'm assuming the Players Association is going to come to an agreement, and unfortunately it's not going to help us with the Astros, but I think there's going to be something in the new CBA that gives the commissioner unbelievable integrity of the game powers to be able to drop the hammer on people. And it would be more like this. This is what I can do to you if I find out about it. And this is what I can do to you if you're not willing to help in the investigation. Like in the NCAA, if you're a coach and you don't come clean and talk to the investigators, you can be sanctioned just as much as if you were guilty of something. So a lot of people say, oh, wait, you're innocent until proven guilty. Yeah, in a court of law. NCAA has their own court, and they don't have to abide by that. And I think baseball needs the exact same thing going forward, and I hope that they get to it. Coming up next, we get the Pulse call. As the proud honor, I guarantee you, Josh Colemanger will hear the words Ferris wheel next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Paul's Call is presented by Brooklyn Bedding. Order your mattress by three. Get it delivered today free.
Hey, it's your call, man.
No. It's your call.
No, it's your call.
No, it's your call.
Hey, nitwits. It's Paul's Call.
Forget the aliens when last week, guys, we got this headline.
Researchers say thanks to conspiracy videos on the internet, more people believe the Earth is flat.
Josh Colemanger, I'm looking at you. You either are or are not a flat earther.
The Earth is flat.
So forget the mad bum story for just a moment. Because until you answer that, we've got this dude.
Nicknamed Mad Mike Hughes, he said he wanted to fly to the edge of outer space to see if the world is round.
Mad Mike is a dude now.
Dude.
Real dude, real story. He needed to see for himself whether the Earth is round or flat. So
Hughes built and boarded a steam-powered rocket over the weekend.
Steam-powered?
He built his own space rocket.
Space, the final frontier.
Powered by steam. Now, if you go back in the Calvisi family tree on the my mom's side, the Fulton side, Robert Fulton, who created the steamboat, it's a true story!
No way!
Absolutely true story! Got zero money from the Fulton side of the family.
No way.
Don't know what happened in there, but somebody must have stepped in, right?
Are you insane?
I mean, nobody actually let Mad Mike.
One.
Nobody actually let him count down to liftoff in his hand-built steam spaceship.
A video by TMZ shows it blasting off from private property in the Barstow, California desert.
What?
A parachute tearing off. It hurtles straight up, then in about 10 seconds, the rocket plummets straight down and crashes.
Wait, Paul, please don't tell me you
killed
someone.
We hate to start the week this way, Doug, but
he was 64.
No,
Doug,
you can't have people die in Paul's call.
Out of only respect, we salute Mad Mike in his final countdown.
The final countdown.
I mean, it's not like we make these stories up.
He was 64.
But we do salute.
He was 64.
The moxie, the conviction, the curiosity with the sawed-off shotgun of sports. Sports takes and the legacy of Mad Mike. in another direction.
Hughes was also a limousine driver who held the Guinness World Record for longest limousine ramp jump, 103 feet.
Dude jumped a limo more than 100 feet. I mean, that's going on his Wikipedia page. That's, oh boy.
What did he at least did he have radio contact? Did he say anything about the Earth while he was going up?
I don't know. Could he tell? Was he high enough to tell? Was there a curvature to the Earth or not? I don't know.
He's part of the flat Earth now, though.
He's flat, all right. Yeah. Oh man! So our Paul's call flags.
Wait, that's not funny.
Our flags are flying half staff. I mean, it's too bad Mad Mike ain't still with us because I don't reckon.
I want to party with you, cowboy.
Now, speaking of cowboys,
the Lone Ranger.
Has Madison Bumgarner, by the way, decided on his walk-up music just yet? Because, you know, we're thinking this would be good. You know, rooting and a tooting, womping and a stomping. We're thinking on the mound instead of a baseball cap. How about a cowboy hat with the D-backs logo on it? That'd be big time on the mound.
You got to have a day game with Belt Buckle Day.
Yes.
Madison Bumgarner Belt Buckle Day.
Cowboy hat giveaway night.
The promotions themes.
Yeah, they're all
gold
over this.
Mine, right?
You got to
yeah,
run with this.
Right. And it's all good fun, gentlemen, you know, until hit the brakes.
Hold it. What the?
Over on KTAR about an hour ago, we had this.
Now, I love the sport of rodeo, and I came out here in 1995 to rodeo. So I was a rodeo announcer. I'm familiar with these events.
That is Mike Broomhead, his brand new show on KTAR.
1-2-1-2.
And Mike Broomhead, I did not know this, has an extensive history in rodeo.
I don't think people understand how dangerous this can be, especially to a pitcher.
Dangerous.
Danger, Will Robinson. Danger.
Like, how so?
Team ropers, there's a joke in the sport of rodeo with team ropers. If you can count to 10 on your fingers, you're not a team roper because they lose digits.
What? Is the D-backs front office listening right now? Because we imagine the reaction.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
When you break down the team roping sport, it involves
wrapping the rope around the saddle horn is when thumbs get caught. So imagine a saddle horn. If you were to put your hand down with your thumb straight up in the air, that's how team ropers are taught to team rope.
You're wrapping this rope, and of course, there's the very real risk of something going wrong.
When that rope pulls tight, if your finger is in the way, it is not uncommon to see, as gross as this sounds, your finger or your thumb pop off at the joint.
Oh.
This is a fairly common injury.
Attention, Mason Saunders. Mike Hazen needs to see you in his office.
We have sort of a problem here.
Well, at least he says he ropes with his right hand. So he's just yes. It's just his glove hand.
Effective immediately from one cowboy to another, Woody to Mad Bum.
We all have to make sure nothing happens to him.
That's right. So, I mean, you haven't even made a spring start, much less the regular season.
It's the first week of the season.
But this whole team roping thing, son, this is not going to work.
Nothing for you.
I mean, the risk-reward here. I mean, you know, it's one thing when the Ferris wheel was throwing axes at the Renaissance Festival.
Kirk Gibson told me they call it the Ferris wheel here.
Right, but, you know, I would presume there, Josh, you're not risking any digits.
We have the Ferris wheel. Josh Coleman are going tomorrow.
We didn't have to tie anything to the axe, that's for sure.
That's right. So, you know, everything was going all swimmingly, but now Mike Hazen's going to, you know, sometimes you got the big job, you got the big office, you got to deliver the tough news like De Niro and the Irishman.
It's the bottom line.
Right.
Bottom line.
Yep.
It's what it is.
That's right. It's what it is. I'm sorry, Mad Bum. Mason Saunders, sorry about that. By the way, we're also not talking about today.
Three ball, got it! Kobe White. You got to love this kid.
We're not talking about the weekend that Bulls rookie Kobe White had for the Bulls that he easily could have had in a Suns uniform.
Wow, bro.
I mean,
that's crazy. That's so love, bro.
Let's see. He had a career high 33 points and had 7 3-pointers. That was, against the Suns. And then he had another 30-plus game here last night against the Wizards. So, Doug, in case you're wondering, he has joined Michael Jordan as the only Chicago rookies ever with consecutive 30-point games.
Wow, bro.
That Kobe White.
I remember no one listening to me at the draft.
Kobe White.
can't finish.
It's time once again for No Comprendo.
So, Josh, this would be things that make us say
No Comprendo.
And let's face it, you Neanderthals desperately need some culture.
Take a listen to violinist Dagmar Turner.
Very accomplished violinist. Probably went to Stanford. Actually, she plays in the symphony in London there, Doug. Okay. So, but she's never played in this setting.
She is playing while surgeons at King's College Hospital in London were literally inside her brain.
What?
What?
She needed brain surgery, and because she was
diagnosed with a tumor near the part of her brain that's responsible for controlling the fine movements of her left hand, critical for playing the violin.
So during the surgery, the surgeons did what?
So in order to make sure those areas of her brain were not damaged, the surgeons woke her up in the middle of the operation and had her play.
Can you play your violin during your brain surgery?
No comprendo.
Okay, wait a minute, wait a minute. What if she couldn't? Were they going to put something back? I mean, what?
Don't know, Doug. Don't know. Not really sure.
That part's got to go back in there.
Not sure if they're working with the net or not. Don't know.
What are they going to find out?
You know, don't say this ain't brain surgery, because it is brain surgery, and we got
to
know.
So they knew exactly where to avoid while taking out most of the tumor.
Oh, my God.
No comprendo.
And right now, they have every reason to believe it is a successful brain surgery.
3 days later, she was sent home.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Small goal.
Is anybody else freaked out by brain surgery?
How does the show make you feel?
Woo!
Doug and Wolf's.
It's all about the you. It's all about
the you. Brought to you by Carol Royce with Keller Williams Realty East Valley. Looking to buy a nice home and can't find one? Go to OurNiceHomes.com. That's OurNiceHomes.com.
My big takeaway from today's show is that in the middle of Paul's call about Mason Saunders.
Oh, boy.
Bob Nightingale tweeted out from USA Today, General Manager Mike Hazen says he's unaware or was unaware of Madison Bumgarner's participation in rodeo events and does not believe it's happened since he signed with the Diamondbacks.
You sure? Because they have a rodeo like every other day in Wickenburg, so you sure about that? I better double check on that.
Josh, what's your big takeaway from today's show?
My big takeaway is that both of us claim to have the eye of the tiger.
Yes, we did.
Oh, no.
And only one won the debate, and that was you. That's we'll have a Bickley and Murata coming up next. Wolf will be back tomorrow. We'll see you then. Ah!